The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Now, this may be some good news because property price growth has slowed to its lowest level in 5 years, according to a report from Davy and from the property website myhome.ie. House prices in Dublin are continuing to rise, but not as fast as had been expected. And in Dublin, they seem to be coming back a little bit. Now, we've two guests with us. We'll talk in a moment to Conor Skehan, former chair of the housing agency. But first, Dr. John McCartney, director of research at Savills, the estate agency. Does this mean that the supply in Dublin is now exceeding demand for new houses and apartments?
Well, I think what it means, Matt, is that we're approaching a point where the supply is beginning to catch up with demand. And that may be a surprise to many people. But when you think of it, we had a 37% increase in supply in 2016. Compounding on that, we had a 45% increase in 2017, further increase in 2018 of about 25%. So supply has been ramping up very strongly. And on the demand side, you only have people's word as to how many units we need.
Well, hold on a second. Leaving aside percentages, I prefer dealing in the real round numbers. So we're building about 22,000 new homes in this country this year, houses and apartments. And I've seen all these reports suggesting that we need about 50,000 that were massively undersupplied this year.
Connor makes a big snort. Connor makes a big snorting noise.
Why? Come on, make the big explain that.
Well,
Connor Skehan.
In my time in the housing agency, one of our jobs was to give people the actual figures of actual need, and the figure you mentioned, 22,500, is precisely what we said was needed. And in my time there, I started to predict that you would begin to see a gradual inflation of claims made where people would say 20 to 25,000, 25 to 30,000, 30 to 35,000, 40 to 40,000. And there you are, Matt, you're at it. It's rubbish. It's a really easily, really predictable amount of bodies that are born every year, beds they need to put their bums in, and it's very easily and a straightforward matter of predicting what the actual demand is. However, demand and supply in housing are a different kettle of fish from people who are trying to buy kettles of fish, because housing is, as well as being a human right, is also an investment grade asset. And the return of investors to the market will complicate it and mean the normal things that John is master of, the laws of supply and demand, break down a little bit around the edges.
Hold on now a second. I see where you're coming from in relation to saying about the birth rates and looking at the population flow. But we also have an enormous amount of people who are renting at present, who don't want to rent, who've been renting unwillingly for years and who want to buy and who still can't afford to buy because the supply that's there is too expensive for them.
We teach our students to watch out for a thing called conflation, where you make a series of statements, each one of which are true, but do not link up as a train. Matt Cooper, you're guilty of inflation. Conflation.
Conflation. You don't give me the wrong.
You nearly had it. What's happening there is it is certainly true that many people rent. It is certainly true that if asked, people all over the world in economies where the majority of people rent, if asked, they say, I'd prefer to own my own home. I'd also prefer to have a pony and I'd also prefer to have three cats. But you know what the reality is? I'm renting because that's what we do in our society. Places like Germany, places like the United States, a third of the population rent and always have. That's a normal modern economy and that's what we're becoming close to. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing people beginning to do the normal things.
Okay, but hang on. It's not that people want to buy homes at the moment because they want to have a back garden of their own and put a pony in it and all the rest of it. It's because owning, having a mortgage is cheaper than renting. It actually makes an awful lot more economic sense own.
I'll let John cut in, but I mean, people are behaving very differently now. There's a generation of, let's call them the kids out there, who are just like all the kids from all around the world who are working in Google. Our equivalent Googleites see themselves moving all over the world. The last thing they want is the ball and shackle of a mortgage.
I know loads of people in their 20s and 30s who are working in Ireland who want to be able to buy their own place and who are livid at the amount of rent that they have to pay. And not just that, Connor, but the fact that they often have to share and often end up sharing with near strangers.
They should watch the programme Friends more often. John, I'm sorry, I'm hogging the microphone.
Not at all. And it's an interesting debate. I mean, my sense of it, I suspect, is more aligned with your view, Matt, that for purely pragmatic reasons, I think a lot of people in the rented sector are probably conscripted in there against their will. And if they could afford to get the deposit together, they might be out of there. But I think whatever the view on this, and we can never know for sure, I think the one thing that we can say for certain is that affordability is, as we speak, improving. Mm. So at the moment, wage inflation is running at about 3.3%. House price inflation in Dublin is running at 0.5%. So earnings are growing seven times faster than house prices. And it won't take a huge amount of time for that to actually result in meaningful improvements in affordability. Because remember, for every extra euro that you earn, you can leverage 3.5 times against that. So if you get a 5,000 euro pay increase, you can spend the 5,000 euro on your new house, but you can also borrow 3.5 times that amount and add that to the purchase as well. So I think that for people that do find themselves in that situation, I think it's important to look forward, because I think that will improve, and it could improve quite quickly.
Okay, but do you think there's enough being built around the country at present?
I think we're approaching the point where the market is becoming more fully supplied. And in fact, you know, in a sense, it doesn't matter what I think. If you look at what the development industry is thinking, what do we observe? Construction employment, a year ago, running at nearly 10% per annum, now down to 5.3%. And in fact, there has been no increase in construction employment.
When you say construction, this is additional numbers taken on to do the building.
Yeah, indeed. And now you could argue maybe builders are finding it hard to find people and all of that. But look at planning permissions as well. Planning permissions have actually gone down in two successive quarters. So my read of things is that house price inflation is slowing and rent inflation is also slowing because we're building more. And actually looking 18 months down the road, the development industry, I think, is also looking ahead and saying, OK, we need to downsize our plans for future construction.
There's another really interesting thing that is buried in that story, which nobody's noticed on, which is the significant increase in transaction levels. I had a very wise old prof once who said in property economics, the thing to watch is not the price of anything, but the number, the volume of transactions. And that's dramatically increased. And as I'm sick saying to people, it's very easy to mistake in a shortage of houses for sale for a shortage of houses.
Yeah, but hold on.
And people are re-entering the market.
Yeah, let me go back
houses.
To John though on this particular point, because we keep hearing now, particularly with new apartment developments and sometimes with housing estates, that rather than them being sold individually to buyers, they've been sold as block lots to pension funds and insurance companies and whatever. So of the 22,000 new units this year, I don't know how many will go that way. But those aren't new units that are going into the for purchase market. They're effectively going to end up being rented.
Indeed. But I think the critical thing is that they free up units for other people who may want to buy. So in other words, you know, if you have the same number of people renting at the end of the year and you've got all of these new PRS blocks being sold, then that frees up other units to be sold by small-time private investors back to
units that are built to be rented are the one thing that the Irish housing market is shorter of than any other single thing. It's the most important missing piece in our jigsaw is having more units that are professionally managed at scale. And it's been a big, big blight on our system, and it's wonderful to see it finally being fixed.
I remember discussing that with you about 5 years ago when I made a TV documentary on what at the time we presented as a potential looming housing crisis. I remember you saying to me at the time, very definitively, that you had sold your house, that you said you rent and you would always rent, you never wanted to own again. Did you ever regret that? Because afterwards, rents rocketed after you said that to me in late 2014.
Yeah, they did. And it was they did go up, and I was paying wincingly high rents because I was living in the wrong part of the city for the rents. So yes, I did experience it and understood the volatility of it. But that's just, it was a passing thing. One of the advantages.
Hang on,
of
the rents haven't come back down.
Points out, the salaries have gone up.
Okay, just take listener comments coming in here. I'm married, 32 years old, expecting my first child, and we are renting a house in Galway. We're paying crazy rent and we do not want to be renting. We can't afford to buy because our rent is so high. But a mortgage for a similar house that we're currently renting would save us about 650 euro per month. Not to mention the uncertainty of renting. Our landlord may or may not sell the house we currently live in. It causes endless stress for us. Ridiculous to say young people don't want to be tied down by a mortgage.
Classic phase change in someone's life where they have to understand and accept the consequences of the new stage they're entering into. And it's a fairly predictable parabola. In the United States, it's called bridge and tunnelers. people who have had a rented life when they were single and without children. Once they have children, there's a need for a garden and stability and people.
And to pay €650 a month less.
They make different decisions about
if they can get the mortgage, because it seems to be, John, maybe you'd know a bit about this more, John McCartney of Savills. If they do actually have a rental record, it doesn't seem to actually help them when they go to the bank seeking that mortgage.
Yeah, I think with mortgages, it is ultimately about affordability. But as we say, the salaries are increasing. And if you had to take a sort of a forward look on these things, you would expect that there's more inflationary pressure in the labour market than there is in the housing market. And I would expect affordability to improve further. Mm.
Yeah, that's the other thing today, by the way. This is a good news story. This is our system starting to work. This is the central bank rule starting to work, because the core story here is affordability, affordability, affordability. And though the central bank rules are very, very painful, they are the beginnings of having sustainable affordability. And the need to hold the nerve with that is what will mean that we will achieve the most important of all the of the goals in housing, which is affordable housing.
Okay, Conor, I want to throw one other thing at you, though, because this is something that is often said. I mean, John referred to earlier about the house being an asset, whatever, is something that people have. They see it as an investment. Or maybe it was you said that, Conor. But there is this thing, at least when you have a mortgage paid off, that you actually own where you're going to live into your retirement, or you have the option of selling it and using the money to buy something smaller or to rent. A lot of people are very fearful of the idea of renting long term, because they feel that when they get to retirement age and that they've a lower income, they won't be able to continue to afford to rent where they are.
Yeah. I mean, and when you make your annual budget in a country where the majority of people rent, saving for age is a very specific part of your economic makeup on a monthly or annual basis. And when you do rent, you have to understand you have different responsibilities to yourself in terms of what you can afford. And being able to afford does not mean spending every single solitary cent on rental. It means that there's about a third put aside for different provision in
but
your old age.
The problem for many people is that the rents are so expensive at the moment, they feel they can't put aside any money for savings.
A lot of affordability is a perception of what you're entitled to have for the particular amount of money you have, and an inability to understand that the choices you're making are dictated by the real affordability. And part of the real affordability of rental is the amount of your rent plus the amount you're putting aside in these normal economies.
So many people in their 20s and 30s can't put any money aside because the rents are so absolutely high that once they've paid their taxes and have their after-tax income, and once they've paid their rent, they barely have enough to live on, no matter how well paid they are.
Okay, John.
John, you take that.
Well, I mean, just to put some empirical clout behind this, I think the evidence from the sector accounts is that the household savings ratio hasn't increased appreciably, even though there has been a 10-year swing towards private renting. So, in other words, we have people, an increasing number of people renting, but they're not engaging in the type of behaviour that Conor would expect to go hand in glove with renting.
Because they can't afford to.
Well, yeah, that's my view on it.
And it's not because they're eating scrambled eggs with smashed avocado either, as some people have said.
Or it could be that they don't see it as their long-term home, and that ultimately their plans are not to be renting for life, that they see this as a suitable housing tenure for a period in their life, and they will revert to home ownership in due course.
Just a couple of things to finish, though. I mean, if we say this is good news, that house prices maybe have levelled off or starting to drop back a little bit, they're still not going to be affordable to a large number of people, to a certain generation. They need to fall back a damn sight more, don't they, before they become affordable. Conor?
There's very clearly established ratios between the amount of money you spend on accommodation and affordability. You should be spending about a third of your income on accommodation, roughly. Would John agree with that?
I think that is the standard accepted benchmark.
If you're spending more than that on it, it means that your aspirations are unaffordable. So if you're finding yourself unable to live on Merrion Square for such and such an amount of money, it's not there's anything wrong with the rents on Merrion Square. It's you've got the wrong set of aspirations for the income that you have, and they have to be adjusted accordingly.
And John, just to finish, is there not a danger, you know, when you take these sort of global percentages about incomes increasing, as one listener says, salaries may be increasing in the private sector at the likes of the Googles and the Facebooks, but I'm 34, a lower paid primary school teacher, and my salary doesn't come close to buying anything worth buying. I've no option but to rent.
My understanding is that there is a pay round coming in for the public service later in the year and another one scheduled for next year.
Yeah, but it's small stuff by comparison with what is paid at some of these foreign multinationals coming in.
Yeah, and but also the overall earnings growth is relatively modest. It's 3.3%, but I think from the housing affordability point of view, it's the ability to leverage against those increases that make them meaningful. And if that happens at a point in time where house price inflation is flat or even a little bit negative, then affordability, in my view, can improve quite quickly.
OK, I have to leave it there. We're out of time. Director at Savills, John McCartney, thank you very much. And Conor Skehan, former chair of the Housing Agency. Good to see you. Thank you very much for being with us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.